Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Eddie Trunk and welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday. Thank you so much for being here, listening, downloading, subscribing, however you connect, however you get the podcast every week. Thank you for doing so. And I hope your week is going well. Two interviews for you this week. We will have Gilby Clark, former Guns N' Roses guitarist, to start things off. And we'll follow with another guitarist, Damon Johnson. Damon, who has played with everybody from Alice Cooper to Thin Lizzy to Black Star Riders, currently has a solo career. And on the interview with Damon, he is joined by producer Nick Raskulinitz, who not only produced Damon's new album, Battle Lessons, but also has done a ton of rock records and is currently making a new album with Skid Row. So Damon and Nick together in the second hour, and will lead this week with Gilby Clark talking about his just-released new solo album. He'll get us started, and we talk a little GNR and some other fun stuff as well. Great to visit with both of these guys, both really, really good, well-known, well-accomplished singers, guitar players, songwriters, and they will make a good double-dip podcast. Again, start with Gilby in just a few minutes, and we'll follow with Damon Johnson this week. However, before we continue with interviews or anything, very, very important news and announcement for you this week, so pay close attention here on the podcast. This will be the final week of this podcast being delivered and produced by Podcast One. This podcast, beginning with next week's episode, will be transitioning to Sirius XM and Stitcher as the new platform for this podcast. Now, that really won't mean and shouldn't mean a whole lot to any of you folks unless you are somebody that usually listens to this podcast and accesses it through the Podcast One platform or through their site or, you know, through their distribution, like at podcastone.com or on their app. If you are one of those folks, starting next week, this podcast will no longer be on that platform. However, it will continue to be free and available to you every Thursday with new episodes from Apple, Spotify, now available on Pandora, Stitcher, and for subscribers, available on Sirius XM as well. However, listen closely. Do not fear. The Eddie Trunk Podcast remains totally free. However, to access it through Sirius XM and their app, you have to be a subscriber. Otherwise, just go anywhere you get podcasts, with the exception of Podcast One, starting next week, in order to hear it every week. So again, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Pandora, or if you're a subscriber, the Sirius XM app, Still a ton of ways to get this free each and every week. The only thing that's changing is that it'll no longer be produced by Podcast One. Therefore, it will not be on their direct platform. But all the other outlets remain free, and you can add to that other places to get it, including Stitcher and Pandora, starting next week. I want to thank the entire team at Podcast One who have produced this podcast since it first began, which I don't even remember how long ago it began. I think it's got to be 5 to 7 years easily that I've been doing this for you through them. I remember signing up with them a long, long time ago. I believe it was Greg Batuzic who signed me up. At the time, it was Chris Jericho who was doing his podcast at Podcast One and recommended me. And, I want to be clear about this. I am not moving this podcast for any other reason but this. As I've said to you every week for the past 3 weeks or 3 years or so, the interviews you hear on this podcast originate on my SiriusXM radio show. Well, SiriusXM purchased the podcast company Stitcher, and they are now in ownership of that company, and they are now bigger into the podcasting world and are getting more and more into it. So since I already do my radio show every day on SiriusXM, and I am a full-time employee of that company, it made a lot of sense, as it you would imagine, considering the interviews you hear were originating on that show, that ultimately, now that they are in the podcasting game, that this interview would also move to them. So that's the only reason why I have no issue at all with Podcast One. You never know what the future holds. Great people, great company. We had a great relationship. There's no falling out. There's no grievance. There's nothing like that. This was just simply a case of synergy and putting this piece of my weekly broadcast schedule under the same umbrella as where I'm already currently doing 6 radio shows a week. So that's the only thing to let you guys know. Nothing is going to be impacted. It's the same thing. We're going to bring you great interviews every week. We may even have some improved stuff happening, because now that this will be under the umbrella where the interviews were coming from anyway, perhaps that's going to lead to some new opportunities here on the podcast as well. We'll see how it goes. So please note that this is only of importance if you are currently accessing this podcast through podcastone.com or through their app. Everybody else, if you're always getting it on Apple, you'll continue. If you're always getting it on Spotify, that'll continue. It'll now also be available through Pandora, Stitcher, and available on the SiriusXM app, but only there is where you need to be a SiriusXM subscriber to access it. And as I say every week, I hope you do become a subscriber. I hope you do come on board if you're in the U.S. or Canada, because it's going to be the same deal. As I also tell you every week, you're only getting a tiny fraction here on the podcast of what I do every day on the radio. And that will still continue to be the case, because this will continue to be a one-time-a-week podcast on Thursdays only and be a tiny sample of what I'm doing every day. So important to note that, and that begins starting next week. So this week is our final podcast coming to you through the Podcast One pipeline, and that will be available on podcastone.com or their app. Everything else remains the same next week. And if you do access through those pages or those platforms, just move over to Apple, Spotify, any of the other outlets. It'll remain free, and you can continue to get it that way. Also, a huge thanks to Katie Irizarry. She produces this for me every week. She has since it started. I go way, way back with Katie now. It's been many, many years since we first met. She used to work with me on my SiriusXM radio show. And since the very first podcast all the way through till today and this podcast, she has put together every single one of them, done an amazing job, and she's been a big help to me with this podcast and in other areas since we first met. And I sincerely thank her, and I certainly will miss having her a part of this podcast. We just simply, don't need an outside producer anymore, given that – SiriusXM is going to handle that internally in terms of putting it together. The producer of my radio show there, Joel Pollack, will just be taking this on under his wing. So that's what's going on. Big thanks to Katie. Big thanks to Podcast One. And I look forward to seeing where we go as this podcast moves over to the Stitcher SiriusXM family starting next week. Again, it remains free every week. So nothing greatly changing, but it's important for you to know what's going on. And I wanted to share it with you right at the top of the show. All right. So with all of that taken care of, we will get to our interviews coming up. Gilby Clark, followed by Damon Johnson and Nick Raskulinitz on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Seven years ago, college wrestler Damien Hurd disappeared from a party in Gunnison, Colorado.
Everyone had been drinking or whatever, the usual party scene.
When, how, and why he left are questions I need your help to understand.
Nobody's heard from him.
No, it's just like he disappeared.
From Cold Case Productions and Podcast One, Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd. I'm your host, Claire Santama. Join me April 20th for the season premiere.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome back. It's Eddie Trunk. And as promised, we will get to Damon Johnson and producer Nick Raskulinitz in the second interview this week. We start with Gilby Clark, who checked in about a week ago. Gilby talked about his brand new album, which has just come out. Little Guns N' Roses stuff as well. Always great to visit with Gilby Clark. Here you go. First interview of two on the podcast. Gilby, how are you, brother?
I'm great, Eddie. Always awesome to talk to you.
You too, man. What are you, I know you're in the studio. What are you working on there? What are you cooking?
Well, I'm actually just in the studio because I have horrible cell service where I live. But we're actually heading out tomorrow to do our first live shows in over a year.
Oh, wow. Where are they going to be?
St. Louis. We have one is a private charity show, and since we were there, we decided to do a live show. It'll be at the same venue. You know, it'll be limited capacity, all that kind of stuff, but it'll be the first time we're playing live in front of an audience in a long time.
So do you want to, can you tell the venue for people listening in that part of the country who may want to attend to the public one? It's when, Saturday?
So the live show is, you know, Eddie, as we speak, I'm going to look on my, it is at, the heck is the name of this place?
People can just go to your,
Oh, no. You know, I don't have no idea where it's at.
That's typical with most musicians. It's like they're just pointing in a direction and they go. They figure it out when they get there, right?
Yeah, exactly. But the public show is Friday night. Night of Rock. Boy, I have no idea where it's at. It doesn't even say on the flyer. Well, that's good.
You are playing with Kings of Chaos too, right?
Yeah, I love that gig. That is my favorite gig to do.
And have you guys, I imagine, like all the live stuff, that's pretty much been kind of dormant for the last year or so as well?
Yeah, we actually had a lot of dates last summer that, you know, obviously in the beginning it got postponed, then to be canceled. And we're trying to get a couple of them back this year. One of them was Summerfest, and I'm sure you know what's going on with that. So I'm hoping that's going to come back around too, because it's such a fun gig. And it's so great, you know, playing with guys like Robin Zander and Dee Snider and Steven Tyler, you know, Billy Gibbons. It's always, you know, for me, it's heaven.
Yeah, well, for people that don't know what Kings of Chaos is, it is this kind of a revolving supergroup, right? And it's Sorum. It's Sorum's thing. He anchors it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. There's just been a couple core guys like myself, Matt, and actually Duff was in there for a long time before the GNR reunion. Was kind of always the core band, Steve Stevens. But now, you're right, it's a little bit more of a revolving door with pretty much Matt, you know, as the only guy that's always there.
And have they talked to you, or has anything come up, Gilby, with some stuff starting to come back online with Kings of Chaos happening again, lining things up?
Yeah, yeah, we're actually talking about a couple shows coming back right now. You know, I mean, obviously they won't be until summer, fall, but, you know, they'll be, you know, kind of the Weekend Warrior stuff, just a show here or there, but, you know, there's no string of dates yet.
Yeah. Now, you're a big motorcycle guy. During this whole lockdown, that was one of the few things people could do safely, is I would think get out on the open road and ride. Were you able to do a lot of that?
A very lot of it. Yeah, I took so many trips during it because, like you said, you know, we're outside in the air. We have a helmet on and a shield. And almost every Sunday, you know, we have a small group of guys that got together and ride. And, you know, we did a couple trips, like to Arizona. And I actually did Sturgis last year, too, but I only stayed for like a day. But I definitely took some good trips.
Yeah, yeah, I would imagine that's one of the really great times to be able to do that safely and to get out there and enjoy the road and, you know, check out from everything. It probably was a real good escape to clear your head.
Yeah, and with the downtime of last year, I actually built a motorcycle for George Lynch.
Really?
Yeah, we've been talking about it for the longest time, and since I had the time, you know, I found what we call a donor bike, and I stripped it, and George, you know, with his great ideas, he wanted a bike that looked like it had been sitting in a barn for 100 years, like all rusted out and patinaed. So it gave me some time. I mean, it took a good 8 months, but, you know, it definitely kept me busy, you know, during the pandemic.
Is that something that you do, Gilby, and have done in the past, build bikes?
Yeah, yeah. It's not, you know, obviously it's a hobby. I have a nice, just like I have a studio in my house, I actually have a nice garage where I actually know how to weld, and I have mills and lathes and all kinds of machinery, and I do like it. It's definitely, for me, I always like having a hobby. You know, to just concentrate on music 100 times, you know, would drive me insane. So it's nice to have that outlet, you know, of the creative aspect of building the bikes, but also, like I said, I only do it really just to ride.
Did you deliver the bike to Lynch? Does he have it now?
Oh, he has it, yeah. If you look on his Instagram, maybe it was a couple months ago, I think it was before the holidays, he has a pretty funny post about it, and I have one on my Instagram too, but yeah, he's got it. Actually, you know, I have it right now because he's on a trip right now, a camping trip, so I have it just to work on a couple things on it.
Yeah, yeah, that's very cool. So you got a record done. You know, another thing that a lot of artists have done during the last year or so in these insane times is, since they aren't able to play live and they're not able to tour, took the time to get creative and make a record. You have a record. It comes out on Friday. It's called The Gospel Truth. Was this record made in the last year, or tell us the arc and history of this?
Well, the record's actually been done for a while. It's been done for over a year. We were planning to release it about a month or two into the pandemic, and after talking to the label, they said, look, you know, just like everybody, let's hold it off and see how it goes so we can get some touring. And then, just like most people, it got to a point where, you know, we just got to get it out. You know, we have to get it out. We'll tour when we can. But it's been done for a while. I don't know if most people know, but, you know, I don't make a lot of solo records, but I hadn't made one since 01. So there'd been a huge break between, you know, 20 years for the most part before releasing the last record.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that long either. But wow, this really has been. Like, what was the last one?
It was 01. Last record was Swag.
Swag, right, yeah. right. Wow, 19 years, 20 years already on that. That's nuts.
I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, I don't know where the time is going, man. That's crazy. So this, and you were in the same boat that a lot of artists were in, and we talked about this. I think when this all happened, there were a lot of artists that were like, do I hold the record? And wait until I can tour it and actually promote it properly? Or are people going to be looking for music and looking for things to entertain them? And is it smart to put it out in the middle of the lockdown? And I think a lot of people, the same thing happened, Gilby, where they went with, well, let's hold it for a while. And then as this thing is dragged on longer than anyone expected, it's like, you know what, we just got to get this out. Because I talked to some artists who wrote already another new record without releasing their latest one.
And you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what happened here. You know, it's like, you know, we're all in unknown territory. We really didn't know how it's going to be. But as you know, there's not going to be any real touring pretty much at all this year. Maybe come fall, winter, but most people don't like to tour during the winter anyway. So
Yeah, yeah. Do you have dates beyond what you're doing in St. Louis in a few days?
No.
Do you have anything else lined up?
No. This is kind of an experiment. I just kind of want, you know, most of my band have already been vaccinated, so we thought it was safe for us, you know, to travel and, like I said, do a show. But this is a little bit of an experiment. We do have a streaming show that we have already taped, but we don't have a release date for it yet. And I know how you feel about streaming shows, but I actually kind of like them.
Well, I don't dislike them. I just think that there's a little bit of a fatigue with them, that because there's been so many, I've covered every one of them because I've had the artists on to promote them. So I don't dislike them, but I don't find they keep my attention beyond a few songs normally. And I just think there was a point where there was just so many of them that, and I get it. It was a useful thing. But I just think now, as stuff is starting to open up again, there's more of a thought of, like, let's get to the real thing. But I think streaming is still going to have a place. I don't hate the streaming thing. I just think that some have used it better than others.
True. I like being able to see the artist that I like in a different atmosphere. You know, whether it's live, and we all know some bands, when they get out there and they play live, it's the same set list over and over, and maybe the streams are too. You know, I try to take a different approach. You know, we're doing songs in the stream that we've never done live. You know, so we wanted to just try something new to, like you said, hold the attention for a full hour. And you're right, it is hard. But, you know, as long as it's, to me, it's live, it's just an opportunity to see an artist that I really like, you know, and not, you know, it's a controlled environment, but it's not like a 100% controlled environment.
Which ones have you seen personally, Gilby, over the last year or so that you really liked? What have you watched?
Well, when Monsters of Rock was first doing them, over at, I believe it was Third Encore, I saw one with Keith St. John. I don't remember if he did Montrose or something or whatever it was, but my buddy Sean McNabb played bass, and I thought it sounded really fantastic, and it looked good. And we did a Monsters of Rock one too early on, and I don't think ours sounded very good. I mean, I worked hard with the guys, but I think as it went on, they kind of got it nailed a little bit. There was a lot of experimentation. And I did watch some of the Kiss stuff, which I did find entertaining, but I can't say I watched the whole thing. I just watched a couple songs of it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been some of them that I've liked personally a lot, and some of them that's just like, okay, I'll drop in on a little bit. And I think it comes down to anything. It comes down to how much do you love the artist? How much do you love that artist's music if you're all in? Like I love the band Soul Asylum.
Yeah.
And I love going to see them play live because they're just a real raw, fun rock band with great songs. And they put out a great record last year, but they, and I love, you know, love going to clubs and seeing them, and they couldn't tour it, obviously. And they did a live stream from that legendary club in Minneapolis where they're from, First Avenue, I think it's called.
Yeah, great club.
And it was great. It was great because it was totally live. It was real. It was just raw. It wasn't the same as being shoulder to shoulder watching them, but it at least I got to hear some of the new songs played live. So it was that sort of thing. So some of them, you know, I've liked a lot. Some of them not so much, and been hit or miss. But I totally get the necessity to do it. So you don't know what you're going to do with yours yet.
Well, we know. It's actually with a company called Sessions. We just don't have our release date yet. You know, we thought we were going to have it by now, but there's a little bit of hold up with Facebook and stuff. But we're, like I said, it's done. It's in the can. It's live, but we just don't have a release date. But it's probably going to come in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
So tell me about The Gospel Truth. Again, it's out on Friday. It's your new record. I didn't realize it until you said it. Your first in almost 20 years. You have some, you've got Nikki Sixx on the record as well.
Yes.
Tell me
I got
about that.
You know, great about making a solo record is I don't have to just use, you know, the same bass player and the same drummer on every song. And it's not that these guys aren't versatile enough to do it. It's just, for me, it's fun. It's fun to, you know, if I have an idea for a song and I really want a hard-driving beat, I can have Kenny Aronoff play drums. You know, if I have a song that a little more creative and bouncy, I can have Stephen Perkins from, like, Jane's Addiction play drums. Matt Starr played on a lot. Bass, I had, like, Nikki Sixx, my bass player, E.J. Kurz, and Nikki, you know. So it's nice to be able to collaborate with different people that way. Once again, on a solo record, if you're in a band, you are, you know, you have to deal with what you had. But like my band guys, Troy Patrick Farrell plays drums and EJ plays bass. They played on a couple songs too to get that live feel that we're used to. But I didn't record the songs like all together, like, you know, 10 songs. I kind of did one or two at a time, worked on it. And, you know, it probably took like a year for the whole record to be made, just because everybody's touring all the time. You just got to kind of get them when you can.
Yeah, no doubt. Tightwad is the name of the track that Nikki is on. And then, as you mentioned, you got Stephen Perkins, Kenny
Aronoff.
What a
combination. Stephen Perkins and Nikki Sixx on the same song.
And Aronoff, I mean, guy, no, Kenny's a monster as well. And there's a video. Now, you've got a video for a great track called Rock and Roll is Getting Louder. And watching the video, I absolutely saw some cameos in there. It was a lot of fun to see that. Talk a little bit about making that video.
That was so much fun. I mean, obviously, I haven't made a video, you know, with the new budgets. So it was a little tricky. And I basically wanted to go to all my favorite places around town, whether it was a cigar store, a record store, or a bar. And I thought it'd be easy to just have someone that worked there go, just, you know, hey, can you do this part in the video? But it was a little tricky. Nobody really wanted, you know, some of them wanted to do it, some of them didn't. And I called Teddy Andriotis, who played keys with us in the GNR years, and when I was at a cigar store to make, you know, I go, dude, can you play this part? And then it just triggered it to go, oh, let's get Slim Jim Phantom to be at the guitar store. Let's get Tamey Down to be at the pawn shop. My buddy Jimmy Harold from Hillbilly Harold at the record store. And it just kind of evolved while we were making it. But it was definitely tricky to try to make a good video, you know, for, you know, like I said, restrained budgets that we have now.
Yeah, it was fun seeing all those guys when I watched it, and I know them all, and it was cool seeing them in there. You mentioned Jimmy and this band Hillbilly Harold, and I've known Jimmy for a long time. I know he's been working at it for a long time. You produced a record with that band, right?
Yeah, we produced a major label record that didn't come out on the major label when it was all done.
And where's the status of that now?
I think that they're going to release it on the label that I'm working with Golden Robot. They did a live record in Hollywood at the Whiskey, which I actually just mixed. I didn't really produce it. But, yeah, the record was done, and it's wild. It's like, you know, the major label, they loved it. They were so happy, and when it came time to pick a release date, they were just like, they were honest with it. They just go, I don't know if we can really do justice to this. You know, we're not as good at rock as we used to be. And, you know, the landscape had changed from signing the band to when the record was done and ready to be released. And, you know, they gave the band an out, which, as you know, is pretty rare.
Yeah. I know Jimmy. I first met Jimmy through Slash, because I guess Slash was the first guy to tell me about him. And then Jimmy called me. He's like, Slash gave me your number or something. He said to call you to try to help me with this. And he's been knocking around on that scene there for a while. And I've seen him open for Slash, and great guy, great band. And I know it's tough out there, especially for these guys that don't have a history. I mean, you know, that don't have somewhere to hang their hat on a past thing. And I know it's a difficult time for a lot of
that.
Them.
You know, it's a difficult terrain out there right now.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. I mean, even for you, I mean, you're talking about going out there to St. Louis and I'm sure playing a club or something. I think there's a lot of people who be like, oh, Gilby Clark was in Guns N' Roses, man. You know, he's going to play, you know, huge places. And it just, it doesn't translate like that. It really doesn't.
It really doesn't.
I mean, I remember seeing Duff play with his band Loaded at a little club in Pennsylvania not long ago. And, you know, there was maybe 50, 40 people in there. And I was just like, everybody's like, well, that's the dude from Guns N' Roses. I'm like, yeah,
exactly.
It's a weird thing. Don't you? I've always found it. It's a weird thing. I talk about this with my audience all the time. Like, you could take a guy from like a mega band, and then for whatever reason, just a tiny percentage of that band's fan base follows along. I've never quite understood why it works that way.
Well, you know, you're a true fan. Like, you know the details of the record, of who produced the record, who's in the band. But as you know, that's a small percentage of the rock audience. You know, they don't know all these things. Like I said, they might know the Axl and the Slash of the band. I find it hard to believe that they don't know Duff, but it does happen. And, you know, we learned that when we went out with Slash the Snake Pit in 95, we literally opened for Bon Jovi at a stadium that we had played 2 years earlier, and we were like three bands before Bon Jovi. And we're playing some of Slash's new material, and the audience of 50, 60,000 people were looking at us like we were speaking French. Like, I found it hard to believe that a Bon Jovi audience really didn't know who Slash was.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's crazy to think about, but it actually does not surprise me at all. Yeah. You got anything else cooking beyond this record? I mean, you're always playing with some different people. Do you got anything else on the horizon?
Actually, not really. Like I said, we're trying to get some Kings of Chaos dates together for the summer and fall. That's something that's going to be fun. And just like you said, like most people, I'm actually working on some new music. Being that I hadn't done a solo record in so long, that I love the experience again of writing songs and recording, you know, with my friends. And so I'm already working on some tracks. I mean, I don't know what that's going to lead to. There's some talk of doing a covers record, which I've never done before. And what's unique about this record, Eddie, is I've always put a couple of covers on every solo record I made. On this one, I didn't. It's all, you know, 10 original songs.
Mm. Interesting. And I know you mentioned Tamey is in the video of that we just talked about a second ago. I spoke to him the other day, and I know next month I'm going to premiere the new song. He's taken 20 years to make a song.
Yep.
So but I know you were involved in it, right? You mixed it?
Yeah, I mixed it. I've been mixing a lot of their new stuff. You know, he has some other stuff that they've recorded besides the first single. But yeah, we're, you know, besides, I've known Tamey for a long time also. You know, we're motorcycle buddies too. We've logged a lot of miles together. So, you know, when he started, you know, doing some new music for Fasty Pussycat, you know, I just kind of, you know, just helping out really, just, you know, trying to get the sounds together for him.
Yeah, you know, I know he's worked on this hard, and I know he's been toiling on it for a really long time, and we spoke the other day, and I'm really I mean, you've known him, like you said, for a very long time as well. I'm really happy for him and where he's at in his life and how he's turned a corner a few years ago. I mean, he's a completely different guy in terms of being sober and healthy. Yeah. I mean, he was touch and go there for a while. So it's great
healthy
to see.
Healthy and happy.
Yeah.
Healthy
it's, he's
happy.
A different guy. It's, I mean, he was always a great guy. And he was always a fun guy, but he is a completely different guy to talk to and be around. Like you said, healthy and happy. It's really amazing. The 180 he's done.
Yeah. We're all proud of him. I was actually with him when it happened, you know, when he first, you know, had the medical issues. We were in Mexico on the Baja, and, you know, he had to sit down and goes, I'm not feeling good. Like, this is not flu. This is bad. So to see, like you said, what he's done with that is, it's inspiring to people. And it's brave. It's really brave, man. That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, this is a guy that, by his own admission, he partied his whole life and partied hard and partied every day. And I remember we were at the festival M3, and that the band rolled up and he wasn't with them. And I said, "Where's Tamey?" And he's in the hospital. I was like, "What?" So it all went down in Maryland, which was that final straw.
Yeah.
And then they finally got him back home. And I mean, you got to remember with him, for people that don't realize, not only was it booze, drugs, whatever, but it was also cigarettes. I mean, he knocked everything out instantly with that scare that he had. Not an easy thing to do the way he did it. And he's just such a changed, better guy for it. I'm really proud of him.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So, all right, man. Well, same old story for everybody. You're in a holding pattern waiting for the floodgates to open, and you'll get out there with Kings of Chaos. And I imagine the idea would you'd love to do some solo touring here, right, with this, with
absolutely,
this record?
Yeah, I'd love to get out there. Like I said, the band's kicking. You know, we're, like I said, we got together to do the streaming event and for this show, and the band sounds good. And I'd like to, you know, play some new songs. You know, it's, you know, there was a lot of years there where, you know, the set list was kind of looking the same. And so it'd be nice to infuse it. And, you know, we added like 3 new songs in the set. And, yeah, I'm excited. I want to play in front of people and see how it goes.
And the video for Rock and Roll is Getting Louder. The band you're using in that video that you see playing there, is that DeAnda on drums?
That's Jimmy DeAnda. Yes, exactly. We should have mentioned good old Jimmy. Yeah, Troy was getting married the next day when we were doing the video, so he wasn't available, and our good pal Jimmy DeAnda stepped in like a true champion and nailed those Kenny Aronoff parts.
Yeah, so check that out, because the video is a lot of fun, and you'll see those cameos in there from Teddy Zigzag, and also, of course, as you mentioned, Tamie and
Slim Jim.
Slim Jim is in there for a second. So definitely check it out. It's online now. The video for Rock and Roll is Getting Louder. And the album, The Gospel Truth, is coming out again this Friday, is available. Gilby Clark's first new solo album in almost 20 years. Have you hit any Lakers games?
No. I mean, they just started having people in, I think, like one or two games ago. So, you know, they hold on to our money, but I haven't gone to a game yet. But, you know, they're going to make the playoffs again this year, and hopefully, you know, we'll get to go to those games.
There's reports. You know, I bring that up because, just to tell the audience, Gilby took me to a Laker game years ago, and we had a great time, and he's got tremendous seats there at Staples Center. But there are talks. You know, Gilby, I grew up, like, when I was really loving basketball, I was a New Jersey Nets fan. Now, of course, they play in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And, you know, by default, they're still my favorite team, even though I'm not nearly as into it as I was when they played in New Jersey.
Yeah.
But that being said, the NBA pundits are predicting a Lakers-Nets finals this year.
It's a very, you know, look, if the Lakers can get healthy and the Nets can get healthy, that's going to be an incredible series if that happens, because those Nets are pretty freaking good.
But they have not been able to get their big three of Durant, Harden, and Kyrie on the floor at the same time. And I think they've played all three. I think all three have been on the floor and in a game active like less than five times or something they've all been there.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So, I mean, and, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen. But, yes, should they be able to pull that off, it could be pretty interesting battle there. So we'll see.
But it's pretty tough all throughout the NBA this year. There's a lot of good teams. Like, everybody picked the Lakers. But, you know, this year's Lakers aren't last year's Lakers. I mean, of course, they have LeBron, which is, you know, an edge over everyone. And for me, you know, Cleveland Cavaliers were my favorite team before I switched to the Lakers. It was a win-win when he left Cleveland to come to L.A., so I was one of the rare people that, you know, was happy about that.
And one final thing, and then I'll let you run. Speaking of, you know, you play with Matt, obviously, in Kings of Chaos, but of your time in Guns N' Roses, I always wondered about this. Do you have a personal highlight for you? Was there a personal highlight gig or moment in your time in that band that you think back on as your favorite time?
I have a few, Eddie. One of them that really stands out was when we went to London to play the Freddie Mercury tribute concert. Because for me, that was my first time in England. So it was new to me, you know, just doing that. And also on the bill was all my heroes. You know, I'm a huge David Bowie, and Mick Ronson was always one of my favorite guitar players. So to see Mick Ronson and David Bowie play Heroes together, it was huge. I mean, besides, you know, us playing the show, just the whole surroundings and being part of, you know, backstage and being able to sit on the side of the stage with Joe Elliott watching David Bowie and Mick Ronson play, that was a huge, huge highlight for me.
Did you meet a lot of the people that day? Did you get a chance to talk to Bowie?
I actually met Bowie, didn't talk to him, but I spent hours with Mick Ronson, his wife, his daughter, talking guitars, and, you know, all the questions I ever wanted to ask him, I got to ask him, because obviously he passed away a few years after that.
Yeah, what was he like? What was Mick Ronson like personally?
Very soft-spoken, but very, you know, kind of like some of those English guitar players, you know, just quiet, but was very open to talking. He wasn't reserved. Like, you asked him a question and, you know, he responded honestly. You know, he didn't offer things, but he was definitely happy that somebody, you know, that was on the bill there, you know, knew, you know, what he did. And like, he definitely loved the fact that I was a fan. You know, it was definitely a great experience.
When you went from when you relocated to Los Angeles from Cleveland, what year was that?
It was you may like this story. It was 77, and I saw Kiss in Cleveland, and then when I got to L.A., I saw Kiss in L.A. at the Forum, and it was when they were filming the live show, and it was the night that he caught his hair on fire, and there was a great band that opened called Cheap Trick. And I'll never forget this, and I've told Robin and Rick this a million times. I saw them, And I remember their set so well that the next day I went to buy the record, and only the first record was available. In Color wasn't out yet. And I bought the record, and I'm listening to it, and I'm going, wait a minute. These aren't all the songs they played. Like, I actually could remember from the night before that some of the songs they played weren't on the record, that record wasn't out yet.
Wow. So you and I saw Kiss for the first time in 77, too, in December, and the opening act I had was Piper, which was Billy Squire's first band, which I still love to this day, those two Piper records, and I love Billy. But I saw Piper. I did not get Cheap Trick in New York.
Well, I actually saw Kiss's Destroyer tour in Cleveland before that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm lucky. Maybe a little older than you two.
Well, I saw a guy at a show once. He had a T-shirt on. It said, I may be old, but I saw a lot of cool shows.
That's what's crazy is, I grew up with, my father was a fireman. I didn't have money, but they knew I was such a huge fan of Kiss and Zeppelin and all that, my father took me to that Destroyer show, and when I got to the show, we had nosebleed seats, and my father actually bought from a scalper, like a 10th row seat, but we could only buy one, and he let me sit in the 10th row while he was up in the nosebleeds.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. That is awesome. No,
one last thing, Eddie. That year, when I moved from Cleveland to L.A., I missed Zeppelin in Cleveland, and I missed Zeppelin in L.A., and I never got to see Zeppelin live.
Oh, wow. The reason I was asking about what year you moved is because going back to Mick Ronson real quick, I always found when I saw see footage and video or hear or see pictures of Randy Rhoads at his time in Quiet Riot, to me, he very much emulated Mick Ronson. Did you see Randy early on and did you pick up on that? And I don't know, was Randy a big Mick Ronson fan?
I don't know that answer either, but I thought the same thing I did see Randy play Quiet Riot in the Starwood days, and I thought the exact same thing, because he was, matter of fact, there were shows where he played a white Les Paul, though Ronson's was Maple. I thought the exact same thing, and even through his Ozzy years, I go, man, I mean, they don't play a lot alike, but I thought his image was very much, he looked like Mick Ronson.
Totally. Yeah, it really is. I'll leave you with this. As we're speaking, I got an email. I've been emailing with your old Candy bandmate, Jonathan Daniel.
There you go.
And he sends his best. I told him I was on the air talking to you, and he sends his best. He's a big-time artist manager these days, as people in the industry
know. He's a superstar of managers these days.
Yeah. So anyway, he sends his regards. So listen, man, it's great to talk to you as always. Everybody check out Gilby's record. Pick it up. It's out on Friday. It's called The Gospel Truth. You can go online and hear some things and check out the video we talked about as well. Hope to be back out to L.A. soon, Gilby. I'll hit you up, man. Always great to talk to you.
Right on. Thank you so much, Eddie. Keep rock and roll alive and well.
You got it, man. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
My thanks to Gilby Clark. Always great to visit with him. Check out his new album out now. We'll come back and joined by interview number two, Damon Johnson, along with Nick Raskulinitz. That's next.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome back. Eddie Trunk here. And our second interview this week is with guitarist, singer, songwriter Damon Johnson, Alice Cooper, Black Star Riders, Thin Lizzy, Brother Kane. Damon has a new album out called Battle Lessons. And joining him on the call is his producer, Nick Raskulinitz, with some great stuff as well. Enjoy. Hey, Nick, what's going on, man?
Hey, Eddie. How you doing, man?
I'm good.
I'm hanging out in the studio. I just got done listening to Thunder in the East with the dudes in Skid Row, and we're, like, totally rocking out.
The Loudness album, Thunder in the East?
Yeah.
Did you guys just randomly call that up for inspiration?
Well, we were talking about, like, the greatest rhythm guitar sounds ever, and I brought up the fact that I think that's one of probably in my top five greatest, like, guitar sounds ever. So we had to listen to the album on Stun, and it's such a great album.
It is. Akira Takasaki is a beast. He's still a beast. And that record still sounds great. That was Max Norman, I think, that did that.
Yeah, totally. And total nerd note, it was recorded at Sound City, which is a trip.
Oh, is that right? That I did not know.
Yeah.
There's Nick, and do we have Damon as well? Damon, you there?
I'm here, buddy. Great to talk to you, Eddie, always.
Damon, you sound a mile away and really noisy on your phone connection.
Well, let me see if I can fix that for you. Hold tight.
Yeah, you do not sound tough to hear you.
How's that?
Way better. Yes, way better. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. I've been able to navigate this entire year of the pandemic with hundreds of Zoom interviews, and every one of them on my Bluetooth ear pods, but I think on the radio doesn't work so good. So,
yeah, radio, you really need to be holding that phone. Yep, for sure. So listen, man, Damon, congrats on the record. The record is out now. It's called Battle Lessons, Damon Johnson in the Get Ready. And Nick, you produced the record. So Damon, we'll start with you to talk about the process of making this record. And was the plan to always work with Nick on it?
Well, the hope is always to work with Nick. You know, it's crazy to think that Nick and I met in 2000, and I guess it was 2014. And since then, we've made 5 records together, which is kind of unheard of. But yeah, man, I was on the road promoting my last solo record, Memoirs of an Uprising, and my 4-piece kind of became a trio, and I immediately started loving that. And I think we did a run of dates with Clutch at the end of 2019. And then, as you know, Eddie, we went out and supported UFO in February of 2020. And man, I had already written a batch of songs. You know, my headspace was to make a really riff heavy rock record, like one I haven't made maybe since the first Brother Kane album. And, you know, I always had in the back of my mind, I'd love to work with Nick anytime. But I also know from experience that, you know, for Nick to clear his calendar to produce anybody, they're going to have to show it with some great songs. So I put a lot of effort into making some demos. And I think it was January that I first played him some of these songs. And I was thrilled, man. He immediately got excited. He said, man, I can tell you've stepped it up in the songwriting department. And I know he was knocked out with just the quality of the songs and the tempo and the energy, and he knew we could knock it out, and we did, man. Nick's the best.
Nick, is that, as a producer and as one of the leading guys doing rock right now in producing, is that always the biggest criteria for you when you want to do a record or work with an artist, is the material's got to be there, that you got to feel the songs are there?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, period. That's it.
Is it tough to go to an artist and say, it's just not good enough yet, you got to come back with better stuff? I imagine that's kind of your role. You got to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really hard, man. And you know, believe it or not, as you know, forward and as honest as I can be sometimes, pretty much across the board, people are like, okay, you know, because I kind of present it as a challenge, too. And it's like, all right, this is okay, but you know, this is great. You got one song that's really, really great. Now all the rest of them need to be this good or better, you know, when you're looking across a whole album. So the quality has to be there. You know, the songs, I want to hear them again as soon as they're over. And if I don't want to hear it again by the time it's halfway through or by the time it's over, if I don't feel that reaction immediately, I mean, that's how I gauge everything on.
Yeah. And for you, Damon, how did you, in terms of the writing, talk about that process, because there's a few things on here that you wrote yourself, but for the most part, you wrote with some other people, or you had at least one other person writing with you on the material. So talk about how the songs on Battle Lessons came together and how you crafted it and the process.
Yes, I wrote most of these songs with my old friend and longtime collaborator, Jim Troglin. And Jim's a friend from the Birmingham club days. We wrote most of my last record together, and he's been a major factor in my life for a long time. And, you know, Eddie, I just had developed a lot of confidence over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, focused on my solo thing full time. I've been listening to a lot of great new music. You know, and again, in the band being on the road touring and performing for just straight ahead rock crowds, I know that was a big factor in kind of where my headspace was with the writing. And, you know, again, man, I got to give some credit to Nick because he's sort of in the back of my brain anyway. You know, we've worked so much together over the last 6 years that, you know, I'm thinking about the arrangement. I'm thinking about the vocal melody. Is this a good melody? Is this lyric great? You know, is it not just good enough? Is this great? Is this going to capture his attention? And, you know, again, when I, you know, when we got together, I'll never forget, man, standing out on the back, it was like the back porch of his studio in Nashville. He was about to start a session with another band. And I texted him. I said, hey, man, can I stop by? I just need 15 minutes. You know, so I gave him my headphones and I hit play. And the very first song, he gave me a thumbs up. He goes, what else you got? I played him something else. I got another thumbs up. So, you know, that gave me the juice at that point, Eddie, to go back in and finish up two or three other songs I had laying around. And we kind of started from there. And, you know, the unique thing about the story of the making of this album in the studio is that we had already determined that we were going to record these songs in groups of three. Again, Nick had a lot going on with his calendar, so we were going to kind of treat it that way. And I was fine with that. So we went into the studio the first week of March and started tracking. And as we all know from the calendar, you know, March 15th was essentially the day that the entire country went into lockdown. And Nick, I know you remember this, man. I was standing out in the vocal, you know, in the vocal room. We're working on a vocal, and I'll never forget him coming over to talk back. And he said, hey, man, the NBA just canceled their entire season. And, you know, we were like, oh, yeah. Okay, well, this is getting really serious. So we knew it was going to affect the calendar and the schedule and all of that, but we could have never dreamt that, you know, the coronavirus was going to be the major impact that it was. You know, we didn't get back in the studio again until I think it was June or July to do the second batch of three. So the recording process of the entire Battle Lessons album was, I think I speak for Nick, it was definitely the most unique, you know, the most unique calendar experience ever.
Yeah.
Nick, anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, we had to work around the pandemic and, you know, my schedule and everybody's schedule. And, you know, I just want to say too, Eddie, you know, as soon as, you know, Damon, as soon as I heard those songs Damon was playing me, you know, I was like, okay, you've definitely upped your game, you know, just from the few songs, that initial listening session. And, you know, Damon's really been able to focus on his writing and his own band and his own thing for, you know, a good solid couple of years now. And I felt that immediately in the songs. And, you know, I think the discussion after the first, you know, I think it was Clap Any Louder. And I can't remember what the other two were, Damon, but I looked at him and immediately was like, it's on. Give me six more, seven more that are just like this and better. And, you know, sure as shit, over the course of the next couple weeks, next couple months, he just started feeding me these songs, man. And it was really great, man, because, you know, we have recorded so much together throughout time that, you know, to do it again and again and again, we really got to keep up in our game every time. And Damon just really brought it to the table this time. So it was super exciting. And that energy flowed through, even though we had to wait months before, you know, in between the sessions, that energy just held through the whole time because, you know, I knew we had these great songs and he knew we had these great songs and we loved them. So it was, you know, and we both live in the same town and we have access to a studio. So we just kind of had to bite our lip for a minute and, you know, ride it out for a second. But in hindsight, I think it worked out even better because Damon came in with some new songs at the very end, you know, that we didn't have back in March or April or May or June or July. So, you know, I think it happened. I think it all turned out great.
You know, it's funny, Damon, you were saying that you did all the songs in groups of three. So that would explain why there's nine songs on the record. So you did three, sessions, you know, so I guess the answer was it was either going to be a 9-track record or a 12-track record, right?
You're very good with math, Eddie Troy. Congratulations.
Only if it's counting to 10, Damon. After that, I'm lost.
That's exactly how it worked out, brother. And, you know, there were definitely other songs on my desk. You know, there were other songs that I had written, but, you know, man, I started thinking back to my favorite records from, especially like the late 70s, man, those Aerosmith records, Rocks and Toys in the Attic and like Van Halen 2. You know, man, those were all 8-9 song records. And I think there's something really cool about that. I think my songwriting kind of speaks for itself. I've been doing it a long time. My fan base knows I'm capable of writing as many songs as they want, but there was an energy about these 9 songs as a collection. You know, and I have to say, it was only at the 11th hour that we even added there's one song that is basically just an acoustic track. And if that song hadn't have been as strong as it was, then who knows, Eddie, it may have just been an 8-song record. But Nick was like, yeah, I love this one too. Let's track this. So, yeah, man.
Are you talking about Love Is All You Left Behind, that track?
Yes, Love Is All You Left Behind. And
that's a great track. Right, so you almost left that off, huh?
I definitely almost left that off.
It was kind of a rock song, and it was kind of big and ballady sounding. And I remember looking at Damon like, no, dude, let's just do it with acoustic guitar and vocals.
Well, Eddie, you'll love this. I totally remember that. And the other thing, I mean, this is how Nick actually.
Sounds like Damon's phone's dropping out there. Damon, you there?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, you're back now. Yep, we hear you now.
Sorry, guys. I played Nick my demo for Love Is All You Left Behind, and it played the first verse, a chorus, second verse, a chorus, and then it kind of kept going. And he just stopped me. He goes, it's a little long. That's the first thing he said. It's a little long. And that's like classic Nick, because he doesn't – there can be no dead weight, like he said earlier. You know, if he doesn't want to hear it again after he gets halfway through the song, you know, that means the song isn't there. So, you know, credit to him for kind of saving that track, because I was kind of on the fence about it anyway. But when we went in and mic'd up the acoustic, we added some Mellotron to it, and he completely cut the arrangement in half, and it was exactly what it needed there. It was definitely too long originally.
And there's a track on this record I like a lot, too, that I wanted to ask you about, and that is Shadow Country. I think that's a really cool song, and I also love the intro piece to that, which almost sounds like it's very, like that, I'm not a musician, and you could tell me what the sound is there, but it's almost Sabbath-y in the little piece before the song kicks in. I just thought it was a really cool song and a really cool dynamics to it as well.
Eddie, thank you, brother. I'm anxious for Nick to talk about that song a little bit, because that is the one song that was written after we started the record. That song was the result of Nick saying, hey, man, we've got this downtime now. Don't stop writing. Let's see if we can come up with something else that's as good as these other songs. And, Eddie, I will never forget sitting at my desk with my little computer setup that I make my demos on. I knew Nick was going to flip out when he heard Shadow Country. It came together really fast. It's got that heavy tempo change in the middle.
Yeah.
It is the single most Sabbath-y thing I guess I've ever done, man. I've loved Black Sabbath my whole life. I would never have said they're really an influence on my songwriting or my own.
I just meant the intro piece. I just meant this, the music, you know, this, the beginning of the song, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Nick can speak to what that effect was, because I know he knows what you're talking about. And Nick, you were a fan of Shadow Country as soon as I played you the demo.
Yeah, the riffs and the vocal and that hit me immediately when you sent me that demo. I mean, that song is, I think that's like one of the coolest songs on the record. Just the nature of the riff. Yeah, Eddie, that intro thing, man, yeah, you know, I don't completely remember what it was, to be honest with you. I know it's some guitar stuff that we, like, I think we made it backwards and put effects on it. I'd have to hear it again to know exactly.
Yeah, well, even though this is a new record to most of us, as you talked about, it was done a while ago. And just like so many artists, there's always the big debate people who have made records during the pandemic or at the beginning of it, finished records. There's tons of artists that I think sat on their records thinking, well, this will be over in a month. And then when this went on and on and on, and it's unfortunately still going on to some degree, they just were like, you know what? I've already written another record. I got to get this thing out. And they just, you know, there was a big conflict, I think, about that with a lot of artists. You know, should we put it out? Should we sit on it? I mean, Rob Zombie just put out his record. I know he sat on it for a year and a half. AC/DC sat on their record for a long time. And then eventually it's just like, well, I got to put it out. I mean, I talked to Roger Glover from Deep Purple. He said they already wrote another record in the time they were waiting to put the last one out. So it's just, you know, people trying to figure this all out. That nobody saw this coming. Nobody knew how to deal with it. And everybody just doing the best they could with it. And, you know, the release approach and the promotion prospects, you just had to weigh what made the most sense, I would think.
In my opinion, I think first and foremost, bands are recording artists. You know, and they should be recording and writing their songs and putting them out. And when the touring happens, then the fans will get to hear all those kick-ass songs they recorded on one or two albums while everybody's sitting around waiting. That's just my opinion.
Nick, as a producer, during this whole pandemic, you've made records. Have you had all the bands in the studio physically doing it, or have you been in any of those situations where you worked virtually or over Zoom with an artist?
Man, I've done it both ways. Last year when everything was a lot hotter than it is now, it was more of a one-on-one, you know, but I still had bands in the studio. We're all just being careful. You know, luckily I'm working with a lot of great bands who are great people and we're all like-minded and everybody's cool with wearing a mask and we keep the studio really clean. And, you know, I have been working through this entire thing pretty much and we haven't had a problem. You know, the session I'm doing right now, I got five dudes down there all playing right now. I can hear them in the background and everybody's got a mask on and everybody's 5 or 6 feet away from each other. You know, luckily I have a big enough studio to where nobody has to be on top of each other and my engineer control room by himself, you know, so we're all pretty separate and we're all real careful.
And the session you're doing now, that's Skid Row, right?
Yeah.
Snake has got more diseases and viruses on him from the decades that COVID would laugh at him, Nick. COVID, having that guy in your studio, is COVID's the least of your concerns, and you can tell him I said that.
Dude, we've got him all the way on the other side of the room with like one of those plexiglass.
You should. You should have him in a body condo. Yeah.
Eddie Trunk, is there a rock musician under your umbrella that deserves more grief than Dave Snake Sabo?
No.
Yes or no?
No. God, no.
The reason for that is he dishes it out more than anyone else I've ever met in my 3 decades in this business. He's the best. Yeah.
Yes. I agree on all fronts, Damon. Yes, absolutely. I mean, those guys are buddies for forever from back in the days when they all used to, you know, live down the street or live in the area. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to what you cook up with them, Nick. That should be a lot of fun. And one last thing on this. So when I hear this record, one of the other things I like about it so much is I love live feeling rock music. I love, it sounds like people were in a room and played in and plugged in and played live. Now, Damon, you got a great band we should give mention to, including another buddy, Jared, of course, Jared Pope on drums. And Robbie Harrington on bass, who I don't know, but obviously great player as well. When you go in and when you did this record, was it how it sounds to me, where you actually all went in and set up and played and really went for that live feel, or was it put together virtually?
No, we definitely, you know, it was only 3 of us and Nick. We were able to get in that same room. Everybody spaced out. We got on the headphones. The amazing thing about Jared and Robbie was that, you know, I sent them basically iPhone demos, you know, of the songs, Eddie, and they did some preparation and they showed up at the studio. And the first time we ever played them together was in front of Nick. And, you know, we just kind of worked out the arrangements there on the spot. Nick always shows up, you know, with his notepad and he's making some changes to the arrangements that I had originally written. And you know, they're both Jared and Robbie are such pros, man. You know, they dove right in. And I do think the other advantage was we were only doing three songs at a time. So they weren't having to show up with, you know, 10 or 12 songs prepared. They could just focus on those three. But I really appreciate you commenting on the feel of the songs and the record, because to me, that's the magic of Nick Raskulinics. That's the thing that Nick has done with every band he's ever worked with. And it doesn't matter what subgenre of rock they're in. It always sounds like a band playing together and feeding off of each other, but he does it in such a way that every single sound is getting a focused attention. Jared Pope's drums have never, ever sounded better than they sound on this record. This was Robbie Harrington's first experience recording with Nick. And I got to be honest, Robbie was a little nervous about coming in to work with Nick, because he's a big name in the rock business. You know, Robbie had records that Nick had produced and was a fan of his work, but he'd never been in the room with him. So, and just like I knew would happen, Nick immediately put his mind at ease, and you know, we had a great time putting all the songs together. But I think the other thing that's part of why the record feels like that, and really all of Nick's records feel like that, Eddie, is he uses real amplifiers. He's using real drums. You know, not that he would turn a blind eye to using some technology or loops or, you know, sampled sounds at some point. But, you know, man, certainly the Get Ready is a band. You know, Skid Row is a great band. And, you know, after talking to Rachel once, they worked with Nick. You know, he said to me, he goes, man, we've never made a record like this. Like, this guy is incredible. The guitar players have never been happier about their sounds, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, for the record, for Damon's record, we recorded as much as we could live. I mean, him and Jared and Robbie are all playing together when we're recording the drums, you know, and then we, you know, kind of go back over and re-record some of the parts, better sound. So, you know, that live feel you're feeling is because those dudes are all playing. I mean, it goes to tape that way.
Yeah, well, you can tell. You can feel it, and as a fan, I can feel it and hear it, and I appreciate it. I love it. I mean, I love when you know, I just love that live rock and roll feeling, man. I feel like you're in that room with that band playing. That's great when that comes across like that.
And they'll tell you, too, you know, that's just not them playing the song once or twice or three times. I mean, we play it 20 times to get those takes, and we'll cut between the takes, the best verse from this take, the best chorus from that take, and we'll put the song together, just like we used to do with giant pieces of 2-inch tape that were lying all over the floor.
Yeah, some people are starting to do that again too, though, because we all know what's old is new again. You got bands putting out records on cassettes. It's crazy. It's the anything goes out there for sure. Damon, before we wrap up, give everybody an update on what you're up to. You know, there are some live shows starting to happen a little bit. There are some small tours. There's our Weekend Warrior stuff. It's starting to happen in certain parts of the country. Have you been able to line up some live gigs?
Eddie, I'm really thrilled to share with you. Today is the actual day that we announced our very first show for 2021. And ironically, it's back at my favorite venue that we were scheduled to perform in March of last year. And as you remember, 2 weeks before the pandemic, Nashville was devastated by a tornado. So that venue is the legendary Basement East. And the Basement East had been leveled by the tornado. And they took all of the rest of 2020 to put it back together. And they've just announced a handful of socially distanced, COVID-friendly shows. And Damon Johnson and the Get Ready will perform at the Basement East on Thursday night, April the 29th. And we are over the moon about it, man. And there's a few other things starting to come together, into the summer and into the fall. And, you know, and honestly, Eddie, I kind of felt like that was the other good reason for putting my record out. Let's get the record out. And then because we're a trio, because, you know, we're not a giant band like Guns N' Roses or Kiss, you know, we can get out there and get busy as soon as it's safe to do so. Mm-hmm. Because we're not some big giant entourage, and we're starting to kind of see the productivity of that. So, you know, man, we're dying to get back up the East Coast, and
You know, my little team is working hard, and my manager, Kevin Lee, who says to tell you hello, by the way, Eddie. You know, they're hard at work, man. And, you know, the record speaks for itself. It's a great tool to kind of help us get out there and just submit ourselves for some opening slots on tours and some of our favorite music venues like the Basement East.
Well, keep an eye and send my best to Kevin. Everybody keep an eye on DamonJohnson.com for information, and his dates come out, or Damon on social media as well. And you can see, and you know, things are going to be moving around a lot, I think, the rest of this year as far as happening, not happening, and all that. So more important than ever to connect with the artists and the people you want to follow and keep up with what's going on social media. Nick, beyond having to deal with Snake for the foreseeable future, what else do you have planned?
Well, I'm going to do this with these guys, and then I'm going to get back into Hellstorm, and we're going to finish that album up. And I'm going to get back and finish Skid Row. And then I've got a couple other bands I'm talking to about starting records with in the summer and into the fall. So hopefully it's going to be another good, busy year of rock, man.
You're just getting started with Skid Row now?
Yeah, we're just doing the pre-production, man. We've got three burners, man. You're going to be stoked. I'm so stoked. I'm so excited about these songs right now. And they're down there working on the fourth song right now. So we've been having a great time, man. They're awesome dudes. Just, I've never had so much Tom's River, New Jersey in my studio at one time. Smells like the Jersey Shore in the studio all of a sudden.
Yeah, but none of them live there anymore. They all bailed. I mean, I'm still there. I'm still in the area, but they all bailed. I mean, Rachel comes back every once in a while, but... Snake's out on Long Island now, and Scotty went West Coast. Everybody's like scattered. It's not, you know, we'll always have between us and them, we'll always have that Jersey bond, but they, I'm still here paying the exorbitant taxes. They got smart and left. Then again, where Scotty is, he's probably, you know, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy living in California with that, what they pay out there. But anyway, you know, yeah, great people. We bust each other's balls mercilessly because we've known each other forever. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you cook up with them. And the Hellstorm record, so you did some stuff with them, and now that's on hold, and you're going to swing back to them after the Skid Row pre-production?
Yeah, we're just taking a break right now for a couple of weeks, and then we're going to get back into it. And Lizzie's already written like four songs during the break, so we're all super stoked to get back into that and get it going, man. We're going to have a great record this year.
Man, Vicious was my favorite record so far that they made. I loved that record, so that's the benchmark for me to beat. I can't wait to see what they come up with. Also great people, and I love all of them, and Lizzie's the best, so that must be a lot of fun to be working on that record.
Yeah, everything, man. I mean, you know, getting to work with Damon last year and, you know, all the other stuff I worked on, you know, and again, I'm so proud of Damon and his everything he brought to the table this time, man. I hope the fans really love this record like I do, and I know he does. And, you know, Let the Healing Begin, man. I think that's probably my favorite song on the album, that and Clap Any Louder. So put those on and crank them, man.
Brace for Impact's another one I like a lot. Hey, there's only 9 tracks on it. We named 5 or 6, so there you go. It's a pretty solid record, right? Between what we went through. Hey, Damon, one more quick thing before I let you go and let Nick go. But I wanted to, I think I asked you about this before, but every time I tell my audience that I'm going to have you on, they ask me to ask you this question about the elusive Never That Came Out Damn Yankees record that you were going to be a part of as Tommy Shaw's replacement. What can you tell us about that? And do you think that it'll ever actually see the light of day and come out?
Yeah. I can't believe you and I've never spoken about that.
I think we did off air and maybe on one of my other shows, but people always still ask me about it when they hear me say your name, because it's kind of like this thing that's out there that people have always heard about, but nobody's ever actually heard.
Well, yeah, man, it happened. This was in 2000 and the year 2000. And indeed, Tommy Shaw was not able to participate in the new record that they were scheduled to make with John Kolodner on Columbia Records, because Tommy had just acquired the rights to the name Styx. You remember, Eddie, they had just parted ways with Dennis DeYoung. So Tommy gave the band his blessing
to, you know, look around and maybe bring in somebody else and make the record. He'd already co-written some songs with Jack, and so those were still kind of part of the equation. I already knew all those guys previously. Anyway, Kolodner was a big fan of a batch of songs I had written around that time, so he was really the one that brought me in. Ted was excited because he always was a big Brother Kane supporter. We had done shows with him. And we worked on that thing, man, for about 3 months, went in and recorded it. Tommy came back in and sang some background vocals on some of his songs. Man, I had a great time. It was a great experience. And then when we got the record mixed and got it back, I think we were just all kind of underwhelmed. And by that point, we were running out of time. Ted had a tour booked. Night Ranger had a tour booked. Michael Cardelloni had to get back on the road with Lynyrd Skynyrd. And we just all sort of said, well, hey, we'll revisit it another time. And here we are 20 years later, and we've never revisited it. And, you know, look, man, it's their band. It's their record. If that thing ever sees the light of day, that'll be up to them. I will tell you this. Some of the songs have turned up on various solo records. Jack Blades put out a really good solo record shortly after that. And there was a song he and I wrote called We Are the Ones. I think that was in a television show for a little while. And I know Ted put a couple of the songs on his record. So it was a great experience, man. And, you know, whenever I see those guys, it's always hugs and high fives. And it was definitely a random experience that I never would have anticipated. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll see the light of day. Maybe it gets a Nick Raskulinitz remix and comes out at some point. What do you think, Nick? You could dig into that.
Oh, my God. That's what it needs, is a Nick Raskulinitz remix. Great idea, Eddie.
Find the masters. Let's go.
I'm full of ideas. Yeah, don't get me started. All right, guys. It's great to talk to you both. Damon, congrats on the record. Damon Johnson and the Get Ready Battle Lessons. It's out now, damonjohnson.com. Nick Raskulinitz also on social media. You can find him if you can learn how to spell his last name, and you'll find him on there. And Nick, of course, good luck with the Skid Row guys, and send them all my best.
I will, Ed. Great to talk to you as always. Congratulations, Damon. And, dude, come by the studio sometime. We're totally rocking your Saldana. You got to hear it.
I'm coming by soon.
Then he'd need to see Snake, and he really needs to do that, you know?
Yeah, just let me know when Snake is not there, and I'll come by. Eddie Trunk, you are the ambassador of rock, my friend. I know you've heard it before, but I speak for so many people, brother. Thank you for giving us all a platform and for waving the flag, and it's always a real honor, man, to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Thank you for saying that, man. Thank you so much. You guys be well. I'm going to get down there to Nashville sooner than later. I'm going to do like 2 weeks of shows with all the people that I know there at this point. So we'll reconvene soon, hopefully, okay?
I love it. Thank you, brother. Can't wait to see
you. All right. See you, Damon. Take care, Nick. Well, thanks to Damon, and thanks to Nick, and thanks earlier to Gilby Clark for joining us this week on the podcast. As I said at the top, this is the final podcast on Podcast One, and we thank them, and I thank them for their support and for producing this podcast and bringing it to you each and every week. Starting next Thursday, another all-new episode, and again, it will be available on all the usual platforms, totally free, as usual, with the exception, the only thing changing next week is, again, if you access this podcast through the podcastone.com site or their app, it will no longer be available there. So please move over to Apple, Stitcher, Pandora, Spotify, and you can hear it and download it there for free. Big thanks to Katie, as always. We talked about her earlier at the top of the podcast. Connect with me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, fan page on Facebook, eddietrunk.com. I'm also on Cameo if interested in a personalized video. Have yourselves a great week. Catch you next Thursday for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.